Good evening and welcome to As the Worm Turns. You are tuned in to KVNF's live call-in gardening show. I'm your host, Jill Spears, and we are here tonight, first show of December, and I got a special guest coming up from Motown. That's right, from the Montrose listening area. It is Charlie Spears, nutritional health coach down there at the National Grocers Store. Good evening, Charlie.
Hello, and thank you for coming. I'm glad to be on The Worm. I listen to it sometimes, not enough, but I love your show.
Well, thank you so much. And you know what we talk about here all the time is organic gardening, and that is our topic tonight, is organic and in every way upside down and forward. So,
yes, it's the only way to go.
It's the only way to go. 527-486-8166-KVNF now. We always talk about the benefits of organic. We're just going to touch on some, and then we're going to get to some nutritional information. But, of course, the one that I like the most is taste. Nutrition, organic produce tastes better. Organic food tastes better.
Yes, everything I think organic tastes better. That's why I think there's a big push for food, farm-to-table food. It tastes better.
Sure. Restaurants growing their own food.
Exactly.
Absolutely. And there's actually scientific data that supports that, not just that we all love Lance's sweet carrots, but there is actually scientific information like that actually people do prefer organic food, apples.
Yeah, as Colorado State University here in Colorado, they did the research on people, and it showed that organic apples were definitely preferred in taste tests. And so, I mean, you have a lot of apples up here, and I'm sure you guys know that the apples do taste better. And there are other studies that show the same for organic strawberries and also organic beef. It just tastes better. Matter of fact, I don't like going to a lot of restaurants anymore because the chicken doesn't have any taste.
Right.
The beef doesn't have any taste. And that's why they have to use so much spice, because this meat doesn't have any flavor. And
right.
If you have a real chicken or a real beef, it makes your mouth water.
Right.
It's a huge difference.
By itself. Yeah.
I can tell the difference big time.
Right. If you're having to add spice and melted cheese all the time.
Yeah, they drown.
You're hiding something or trying to hide something.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And I think, well, we all know when you eat organic, it's hard to go back. You know, the color too, everything about it looks real.
Exactly. And, you know, not a lot of conventional produce as well, it has to be harvested so far because it has to have such a long transit time. They pick it when it's immature. And so, you know, by the time we get it, it's pretty old product. So, you know, that's why we like local producers.
Right.
And eat stuff that's fresher and closer to the picking.
Right. And I think that's another advantage that we like about organic is the value for communities.
Yes.
I mean, there's the component of economic, but there's also the community factor in eating local is.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Sharing produce, sharing seeds, and
eating
close to home.
We want to encourage everybody to either grow your own produce. You know, that's what this show is about.
Right. Try it.
Everybody should grow their own. It's fun. It's rewarding. It's tasty. But if you can't, you know, try to support your local farmers. So they all deserve to make a great living. And we need to support all of them.
Yeah, 527-486-8166-KVNF now. And what percentage of farms in the United States is organic? Do you happen to know that? Or what percentage of food?
Well, the percentage of food that's sold in the grocery stores is mind-blowing. Only 1% is organic.
That people actually have access to in a
this is across the United States. Only 1% of the vegetable and fruit production is organic. That's very depressing, but on the other hand, it means we have huge opportunity for growth.
Right.
There's 99% of the people need to be switched over organic, and it's a very profitable niche. As a matter of fact, in the last recession, which has hit us hard on the Western Slopes since 2008, we're now going to 10 years, nationwide, the fastest growing sector during this whole recession has been organic food, and that's why you see the big companies like Walmart, Kroger and City Market and Albertsons, they're all adding organics, not necessarily because they support organics, because there's a huge demand.
There's a demand, right.
And there's a lot of profit to be made. So that's what we want to do is make sure that profit goes to the small farmers where right. it belongs.
Right, exactly. And isn't there something, too, that there's studies that actually show that in organic communities that people actually in that density or that population are actually healthier?
Oh, absolutely. And not only healthier because organic is sustainable, but the United States is spraying, and listen to this, 1 trillion pounds, 1 trillion pounds of pesticides every single year.
And on 99% of our food.
Yes, exactly. And worldwide, of course, people want to mimic us. So worldwide, we're talking about 5 trillion pounds of pesticides in all the world's big rivers. And of course, this has sequences Ooh. That runs off into the water. And the big thing that I've noticed and that I talk about in some lectures is there's 550 dead zones around the world where all these pesticides run off into the water. And where they empty the ocean, they create dead zones. A good example, this is the Mississippi where it goes in the Gulf. Well, the Gulf is a very rich fishing community. A lot of people make their lives with fishing, oysters, great seafood,
right.
shrimp,
Alive.
Red snapper. Mm-hmm. But this summer, National Geographic, and I'm sure you others have heard that there's the biggest dead zone ever in the Gulf of Mexico. And this happens every spring. It's a phenomenon. They plow up all these dirt fields in the Ohio Valley and across the United States, et cetera, and they spray these trillion pounds of insecticides and herbicides. And this is usually in the spring when there's no growth. That's when they spray it. And, of course, you know that the United States gets heavy rains, heavy snows,
right?
And there's no vegetation on the ground. So a lot of this stuff actually washes off into our water, our streams. And so it's a huge problem, and it takes months for this dead zone to get back to normal. By the end of summer, it sometimes will disappear, but like I mentioned, this year we set a record. It was a dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico that normally would produce shrimp, all these great fishing opportunities for the locals down there and also for us to eat. I love oysters myself. I love shrimp. And that used to be the greatest place to get both those was the Gulf of Mexico. But, of course, when you have a dead zone, that means these guys have to now go out almost 100 miles before they find any live fish.
That's a long way out in the sea.
Yeah. It is.
Okay, 527-486-8186, KVNF now. A trillion pounds of pesticide sprayed on our food each year. And what actually happens? What is the benefit, or is there a benefit? It's going for insect, right?
Well, yeah, insects can be a problem, but of course we can handle insects through organic means as well. But they've gone on to that only 1% of our produce is organic. So 99% of what people are buying is heavily sprayed with insecticide or herbicides.
Right. And that stuff that they're spraying only kills not all the insects going for. I mean, they're spraying all of that, but what's the effect of it?
If they want to get one individual insect in, say, a field, only 1% of what they spray is effective. In other words, it's like carpet bombing the whole field. They kill all the beneficial insects as well.
Right.
They kill a lot of great pollinators. They kill off the birds. So only 1% of that trillion pounds that they spray every single year gets to the intended insect. That's a pretty poor result. It means 99% is wasted. 99% goes in the environment, our groundwater.
Into the dead zone. Right.
And the USDA, in fact, has done a study across the United States. 97% of the rivers in the United States show pesticide residue. And, even worse, you hear about groundwater. Well, this stuff year after year has percolated down the groundwater. Great aquifers like the Ogallala in eastern Colorado, Nebraska, Oklahoma. Those aquifers are even showing, I think, over 60% contamination with these pesticides. They percolate into the groundwater, the streams, and they, it's a sterile world in there. You can drive from here to Chicago along Interstate 80 and be going along 75 miles an hour, and you see endless rows of corn. Mm-hmm. And if you pull off your car and go off in the middle of these fields, you would find no birds, no insects, Right. It's an eerie, sterile world full of GMO products that like insecticides.
Yeah, we have some people here in Paonia that spent some time in a cornfield like that, and spooky.
Yeah, it is spooky and depressing. We like when you go out, you like hearing birds, you like hearing insects.
Right, yeah, and this ratio is mind-boggling. Hey, Ben from Paonia, he's a local science teacher here. He has a comment. Good evening, Ben.
Hi, how's it going? I appreciate the speaker talking all about the dangers of industrial agriculture and pesticides, so really appreciate bringing to light some of these issues.
Awesome, thank you.
But wanted to just offer a little bit of insight about the dead zone. The speaker was talking a lot about the dead zone.
Okay.
I teach our students here all about the dead zone. And the dead zone is actually a result of high amounts of fertilizer. And so wanted to kind of make sure that the big misconception in sort of the general population all about fertilizers and pesticides, both involved in industrial agriculture, but both having very different effects on aquatic ecosystems. So it's really that fertilizer, it's nitrogen and phosphorus fertilizer, that contributes to the dead zone. The pesticides, most of them have a pretty short half-life, and so they don't actually make their way all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico. So just wanted to clear that up so we don't keep perpetuating that.
Okay, so the difference between fertilizer and pesticide. And what's an example, Ben? It was a little difficult to hear you on your phone, but an example of a fertilizer that's contributing to that dead zone.
Yeah, so around here, most common fertilizer is probably going to be ammonium nitrate. And so nitrate fertilizers, we don't use a whole lot of phosphate fertilizers in our area, but the Midwest, a lot of phosphate fertilizers as well. So those two nutrients, they make their way down to the Gulf of Mexico. They create these massive algae blooms because algae is a plant, just like corn. It loves nitrogen and phosphorus. And when those algae bloom, they then quickly die, and all that decomposition strips the water of oxygen. And so the dead zone the speaker was talking about is all about that lack of oxygen, which is contributing to massive fish kills, huge death in benthic invertebrates, things that are kind of the base of the food chain there in the aquatic ecosystem. So it's that nitrogen and the phosphorus that we're putting on as a fertilizer that makes its way down all the way into the aquatic, to the Gulf of Mexico.
All right. So another living through chemical effect.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And something that, you know, similarly, industrial agriculture, we're using massive amounts of nitrogen and phosphorus, that fertility that, you know, we got to keep adding every year to the soil because those big corn and soy farms are taking it away each year, and we're not really letting that soil rest.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Back to soil health and diversity. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, great. Great point. Thanks for sharing, Ben. Appreciate that.
Yeah, and Ben's right. Dead zones are really, they are from over-fertilization. There is an algae overgrowth. Dead zones are caused by oxygen is totally depleted in these dead zones. So that is the real cause of death. But, you know, at the same time that they're applying this ammonium nitrate, they're also adding the pesticides and herbicides, which also end up in the water. They know that the dead zones are caused by the fertilizer, but they haven't studied the other. And I can't imagine that's good. But every year, you're right, Chesapeake Bay by Washington used to have a huge dead zone. By reducing the runoff into Chesapeake Bay, there's been huge improvement for that. Of course, the Mississippi is a huge drainage of the Missouri, the Ohio, the big rivers of the United States. And so hopefully we can decrease the inflow of the Mississippi of these fertilizers. And by the way, just a quick note on fertilizers. Fertilizer really started in the 1940s. During World War II, we made a lot of most bombs are made from ammonium nitrate and stuff. And so actually when World War II ended, instead of closing all these bomb plants down to keep the productivity going up and the people employed, they switched from bomb production over to fertilizer production. So fertilizer that we use today is the direct result of World War II bomb production that goes on today. And I don't need to mention, you know, that's how Timothy McVeigh took down Oklahoma City. It was a big thing of ammonium nitrate that sprayed on the fields. They use that as a powerful bomb.
Yeah, so better living through chemicals for sure.
Better living through bombs.
Okay, 527-486-8186, KVNF now. It's Charlie, who's a nutritional health coach, also a chiropractor for many, many years.
Over 20, yeah.
Over 20. And we have Larry on the line. Larry's from Paonia. Good evening, Larry.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm talking about the dead zone at the delta of the Mississippi River. I'm just wondering, because you didn't mention it, but what about the interaction between pesticide runoff, which is, I'm assuming, the primary cause of the dead zones, and the deep water horizon debacle of a few years ago?
Deep water horizon. I'm not familiar with that, Larry.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. Like we just mentioned, though, the dead zone is really caused from more fertilizer and overgrowth of algae.
Well, the deep water horizon was the probably the biggest environmental catastrophe ever to have happened in the zone.
Yeah, the oil platform that burned and sank.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, that's BP. Oh, yeah, God knows what that did to the Gulf.
Boy, that's like a triple trifecto.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what the interaction between that and the pesticide runoff might be, because I'm sure it can't be anything positive.
No, and they don't know. Most of that oil actually has formed big globs in the bottom of the Gulf, and so, you know, it's an ongoing problem that they don't know. Of course, BP says that everything's okay and we're getting fisheries back, but, you know, between the insecticides, the fertilizers, and the oil production, I mean, it's a triple whammy for, and, you know, we're talking about huge economic losses to these people. You know, the Gulf is a beautiful, rich marine fishery. And so anything we do to impact that affects everybody. It's billions of dollars in lost jobs and productivity in all these Gulf states.
Yeah, fishing and farming, similar thing.
Mm-hmm. Bubba Gump. You know, there's no more shrimp. You know, Louisiana used to be noted for shrimp. My dad's from the panhandle of Florida. Born in 1920, we used to go down Apalachicola Bay. Beautiful oysters, and now it's hard to find oysters that are worth a darn in the Gulf. It's hard to find shrimp that worth a darn in the Gulf. So it's real sad to see the decreased productivity in the aquifers and also the the dead zones. You know, every major river in the world where it runs in the ocean, like I mentioned. Gulf of Mexico is only one dead zone. Chesapeake Bay is another dead zone. But there are 550 dead zones every year around the world, from the Amazon to the Ganges River to the Indus. And all these major rivers have dead zones, and they're getting worse every year. Sure, they're short-lived, but they're deadly in the short time that they're there, and they're getting bigger.
Mm-hmm. Think watershed, people.
Thank you so much. I'm just interested in if any studies have been done on the interaction between the pesticide runoff and the...
Yeah, Ben, our earlier caller, may know something about that.
Well, I can just tell you, it would be a huge toxic overload on the caudic. You know, any toxin you take in have to be handled by the liver. So when you have oil toxins, pesticide toxins, herbicide, pesticide, all these toxins are a big drag on all animals, and it decreases their metabolism, it decreases their reproduction rates. Everything is negative about it.
All right. Thank you, Larry, for your call and your question.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Appreciate you listening. Okay, 527-486-8186, KVNF now. You know, some of this, well, it's all pretty depressing, but people need to hear it and make the choice to go organic and, keep our soils healthy. And it can actually happen, because there's statistics about finding pesticides in urine and how that can improve when you go organic. Can you speak to that a little bit, Charlie?
Well, yeah, just because of this overuse of pesticides, it's been studies, 94% of the United States population, if I were to run a urinalysis on you, you will show pesticide residue in your urine. And I think 80% of the pregnant women in Canada had pesticide residue in urine. Well, of course, this causes a lot of problems in the body. But the amazing thing is another study was done, and if you only eat 80% organic fruits and produce, only 80%, you have to be perfect, 80% fruits and veggies for 1 week, they showed a clearance rate of over 96% of herbicides, pesticides in urine.
Wow. That's drastic.
So even though we have a huge amount of the U.S. population is showing daily urine pesticide residue in their urine, by just changing organic, mm-hmm. we decrease this in the 90 percentile through test. And that's quite amazing. So it shows you if you go organic, your body detoxifies quick. And so it's wonderful news.
Plant a garden. Just try it. Put something out there. I mean, really, you're going to make yourself healthier, and you're going to enjoy it. And pretty soon, you're not going to be able to go back to these foods.
Oh, absolutely. And like Lance mentioned, a lot of these crops you can start, you know, spinach, lettuce, kale, you can start these all during the season. And kale, you know, that's a great wintering thing. You know, it loves cold weather. And kale, of course, is one of the most nutrient-dense veggies you can get.
Yeah, it loves it. It's sweet, sweeter and sweeter when it's colder out. 527-4868, 1-866 KVNF now. Nutrient dense, you mentioned. Could you define that for us, just what that means?
Well, all plants make a lot. They take in nutrients, of course, minerals through the soil. Then they make vitamins and other products called polyphenols. And plants make these things. Essentially, a lot of these things are to protect them from ultraviolet, from insects and little bugs in the environment. That's another thing about pesticide use is plants get lazy. Plants that are stressed by insects, ultraviolet light, and stuff like that tend to have an increase in density of important phytonutrients. Phytonutrients, for example, would be the orange of a carrot is beta-carotene. The red of a tomato is lycopene. Kale, its coloration, as well as marigold coloration, is lutein, and that's one of the main compounds in your macula of your eye. So, you know, we eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. The average primitive tribe in the world eats anywhere from 500 to 800 different fruits, nuts, vegetables, and tinctures. In the United States, in the Western world, we eat three.
Oh, my gosh.
Corn, wheat, and soy. And, you know, you might throw in some tomatoes in here and that.
That's depressing.
Yeah, it's really ridiculous. So, you know, diversity is the name of it. That's why you want to get your basket full of colors. You know, each one of those colors is a phytonutrient that plants make. You know, so that's what you're looking when you and when you do shop, make sure that your basket is full of color. Like I mentioned, reds, the purples, the yellows, the whites, all those are important phytonutrients.
Yeah, and even something like tomatoes can have more lycopene, more vitamin C than a traditional grown or conventionally grown.
Yes, tomatoes show a more lycopene than their conventional or organic tomatoes. I'm sorry, show a lot more lycopene than their conventional parts. And lycopene is a good antioxidant for your skin. It protects you from ultraviolet light, and it's good for men's health. Prostate really loads up on lycopene. As far as other nutrients, vitamin C in general, they did a comparison, a study. Vitamin C around 20% more. Chromium, almost 60% more. Phosphorus, almost 20% more. Magnesium, 25% more. Iron, phosphorus. These are all major improvements in organic over conventional. As well as very healthy vegetables like broccoli. They're called cruciferous vegetables, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower. They have very important sulfur containing compounds that are critical for your liver's detoxing ability. One of these would be called glutathione. I'm sure some of you into nutrition have heard of glutathione. It's a very potent compound that for your body for detoxifying and also antioxidant. And so organics have found to have higher levels of these compounds. Organic tomatoes have 20% more lycopene, 30% more vitamin C. And on average, studies show pesticides levels are 48% level, lower in organic, and arsenic and cadmium are 400% lower. So those are heavy metals that are very dangerous. They show up a lot of pesticides, herbicides, and fertilizers now, cadmium, and also in a lot of electronics. So that's a big problem.
Yeah, that's where you hear that.
We don't want heavy metals like mercury, cadmium, lead, arsenic. Arsenic is used in chicken production and turkey production, by the way, as a growth promoter.
Okay. So, we could go on and
on
here.
Yeah, I know. My goodness.
I think and what's fascinating to me, too, and really exciting, is that there's great research coming out now to really support what we all know, that organic food is more alive, it's better for you, and it tastes better. It's sustainable, it helps our communities, it's getting back to the way food should be.
Yes, and another example would be organic blueberries have significant levels of compounds called phenols, anthocyanins, which are very powerful antioxidants. I already mentioned the tomatoes being better. Organic kiwi fruit has a lot more polyphenol content. And polyphenols are compounds found in plants. There's a lot of different polyphenols in nature, but some of them are resveratrol in grapes, anti-aging, lutein for your eyes. That's found in kale and a lot of different things. Lycopene in tomatoes, good for prostate. Zeaxanthin for eye health. EGCG is the active ingredient in green tea. So when you hear green tea, we're really thinking of EGCG. And so those are just some more examples. 41 published, a guy reviewed 41 published studies comparing nutritional value of organically versus conventional grown. And just in general, organic stuff has about 27% more vitamin C, about 21% more iron, 29% more magnesium, and 13% more phosphorus. So these are all critical for blood, bone, immune system, and they should be in the food you eat.
Right. That's why we eat, isn't it?
Yes. And I'll remind you.
For nutrients.
I'll just remind you, vitamins are named vitamins because the human body cannot make vitamins. You have to get them through your diet. So if your diet is devoid in vitamins, you will pay biochemical price in your body. It will just, it's like having an 8-cylinder car that's only run on 4 cylinders. You right. might still get down the street, but you're not thriving and you're not operating at your maximum potential. And that's what nutrition is all about. We want to increase the maximum nutrition in your body, but also decrease the toxic load on our body, like these pesticides, herbicides in our body, in our urine, in mom's placental blood, in their breast milk, and all this.
Yeah.
And we want to clean up the environment, clean up the bloodstream. And also, this trillion pounds of compounds a year sprayed is not sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
Organics is sustainable forever.
Right. 527-486-8186, KVNF now. We probably have time for one more call. And I just want to quickly move to another topic, which might just be a whole nother show. But that part of the problem with some of these pesticides is that they're killing our gut bacteria. And that's got a significant nutritional effect.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone's heard out there the importance of your microbiome, your probiotics, and your gut. They essentially, you don't run them, they run you. And so you want your home to be a good home for your probiotics. They literally train your immune system. They communicate with your brain, your skin. Your immune system expresses more genes than your human body. And you're actually outnumbered by probiotics 100 trillion to about 1 trillion. So they outnumber your human cells by 100 times. So the long short of it is one of the major pesticides, of course, is Roundup. One of the major ingredients that is called glyphosate, and originally Monsanto patented glyphosate as antibacteria. So when you eat a genetically modified food that is resistant to glyphosate, and all these fields are sprayed with glyphosate, it is a whole other show. It causes a lot of problems in the human body. It messes up your endocrine system. It messes up fertility. It messes up the energy production in your mitochondria, which are your energy producers in your body. And it's just so disruptive. But like I mentioned, its main initial thing was antibacteria. So when you're eating GMO food and your glyphosate, you're killing your bacteria in your gut. And the irony is the most important bacteria in your gut, in your small intestine, it's called the lactobacillus family, And the main member of that is Acetophilus, which is everybody heard of. That's just Frank Sinatra of that family. Well, glyphosate preferentially kills lactobacillus, which is not a good thing. And then in your colon, the main species are called bifidobacteria. So it kills those things specifically, and bad guys like Salmonella, E. coli, and Clostridium are more resistant. So by consuming all these pesticides, you're actually really throwing off your gut probiotics, giving the bad guys a big foothold, and you're wiping out the good guys.
Wiping out your immune system.
Exactly.
Hey, we're almost to the end of the show, but Dia from Paonia is on the line. Good evening.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I'm really enjoying your show, and you guys really have chemistry. I'm enjoying this a lot. I'm talking to my friend here over here, Chris, and we're talking about the bacteria earlier, and we were wondering what are some of the most powerful foods you can do to feed the gut?
Probiotics.
Just probiotics.
Well, fermented foods all have probiotics. So if you don't buy probiotics, eat a lot of fermented foods. Kombucha, kimchi, sauerkraut, anything fermented is fermented by good, healthful probiotics. So,
Are the kombuchas good if they have too much sugar in them? Just because sugar is not that great for the gut either?
Sugar is a whole other lecture. Sugar wipes out everything in the body. So, yeah, when I get kombucha, I get the kombucha with the least amount of sugar.
And as far as yogurt goes, you do the same thing?
I will not eat yogurt with sugar in it. All your flavored yogurts and flavored kefirs are just sugar bombs, which, in my opinion, poisons the whole point of the yogurt. You get the probiotics from it, but the sugar does a number on you.
Okay.
So, yeah, use plain yogurt, plain kefir. They taste delicious, by the way. I love them.
Oh, yeah, and I've heard an apple a day does keep the doctor away. What do you think about that?
An organic apple a day. The other will send you to the doctor because it has...
Oh, I was just wondering because so many of our fruits are, you know, sprayed nowadays, and that's another reason to eat organic, I've heard, is you're just not even doing yourself any favors by eating fruit or vegetables if they're sprayed.
Well, exactly. And I'll just tell you my dream. The show's ending, but my dream is to see the whole North Fork, the whole Uncompahgre, Grand Valley, organic. It's super good for the community. There's increased economic benefits for everyone, and it's the way to go.
Well, thank you very much. We're really enjoying your show, and keep up the good work.
Thanks for the call, Gia. Uh-huh. Thanks for listening.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
All right, Charlie, thanks so much for being here tonight and talking about this really important topic. And Charlie, again, is down at the Natural Grocer Store in Montrose, and he's available there for anybody to have a consult and ask questions anytime.
I work Tuesday through Saturday. You can call me on the phone at Natural Grocers, 249-2724. You can talk to me anytime on the phone, or you can come down there and visit me. I love talking about this, heart health, brain health, anything you want to talk about.
Yeah, and you have a lecture actually this week, this Thursday at 4 p.m. on probiotics.
Yes, probiotics.
Gut health.
A free lecture, 1 hour long.
All right, super. That is going to do it for As the Worm Turns tonight. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for being here, Charlie from Montrose. It's Lady Lou coming up with One Woman's Perspective next.
Good night, everybody. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to KVNF.
I don't know who you took a shine to, or who you're about to make a sign to. I got a gal that I love so. Low, little low, and low.